Chapter 15. Dead Man's Words. Every ghost that calls upon us brings another measure in the mystery. Death is there to keep us honest, and constantly reminds us we are free. Dan Fogelberg, Ghosts. Zeke Harkness's face, streaked with blood and grime, filled the vidscreen. His eyes were wide with terror, but there was a determined set to his jaw that Mal had never seen before. "I hope you all get this. Got no idea if I'll even get it off-world before—" He broke off, swallowing hard, and glanced behind him. The sounds of battle and screaming were clearly audible. Mal glanced at the date on the lower corner of the screen. 2 days old, recorded just about 24 hours after Serenity broke Atma on Three Hills. "Listen," said Zeke, urgently into the screen, raising his voice over the sounds of carnage. "They showed up, out of nowhere. Reavers, a whole 2 ships full. They caught us by surprise, which ain't unusual, but, Malcolm, they ain't acting right. We got defenses right enough. We've stood up to Reaver attacks before. Even caught by surprise, they shouldn't have been able to take us all. But they're organized, acting like Goram soldiers, almost, except for the eating of folk and the rest of it. But I've seen battle just like you, and I know when someone's obeying orders and when they're just killing. These Reavers, Malcolm, they're being told what to do. They've already wiped out Helltown and most of Gangxi. Everyone that's left is holed up here at the station, and we ain't gonna last much longer. We've sent out distress calls to the feds, but you can figure on the response." Zeke wiped his brow with a badly shaking hand. "It's a ghost that's talking to you over this way of Malcolm. I'm sorry. I know how you are about stuff, but don't you go thinking this is your fault. Just find out what the hell happened to us, Malcolm Reynolds. Find out why, and kill the Goram sons of bitches that are behind this. I know I can trust you for that." He drew an unsteady breath. "And if you could let my sister on Ariel know. Don't tell her how, just—" He was interrupted by an almighty crash, and terrible screams and yells drowned out anything else he might have said. They saw him turn, screaming something incomprehensible, and stagger as a dark shape barreled into him. Blood splattered the vidscreen. Then something heavy struck it, and the image dissolved, mercifully, into snow. A long, strained silence stretched over the bridge. Mal could feel his nails cutting into his palms, knew that if he looked down he would see the bone showing yellow through his skin. His hands were clenched so tight. "Somewhere out there, there is something terrible happening. Something I can stop or help you stop." The doctor's words to him at their meeting came back, echoing in the horrified silences of his mind. And worse, his more recent words, "I'd say this little item charged up with psychic energy isn't just for tracking. It's for controlling." Had he known about this before? It seemed almost possible, given how swiftly he'd identified the little bit of metal as a tag back on Three Hills. Slow rage built in Mal's belly, hotter than hellfire and corrosive as acid. Wasn't right what happened on Three Hills, to Zeke, to Ricky, to the nameless shopkeep who'd given them a little kindness. Wasn't right what had happened to anyone in this godforsaken verse, but they'd already survived a Reaver attack, had faced down the terrors in the woods. They should have been left alone to get on with their lives, not fall prey to a nightmare. If the doctor had known of this, known of Reavers behaving strangely, and he hadn't said, then was it his fault? Don't be jumping to conclusions, boy. Not until you got all the facts. He could hear the shepherd's voice in his head. Or was it his ma's voice? Funny how much she and Book had been alike. He raised his eyes to meet Inara's white face, to Zoe's hard, steely gaze. Inara had one hand pressed hard over her mouth, the other to her belly, as though she were giving thought to getting sick. Zoe looked impassive, but Mal didn't need to be a reader to know that she was seeing her husband's corpse skewered in the very chair she now sat in. He opened his mouth, but to say what? Words could not fly past the knot of grief, of rage and guilt in his throat. It did not matter that they had barely known any of the folk on Three Hills, that Zeke could hardly be considered a true ally, let alone a friend. He saw Ricky's young face, determined and terrified and heartbreakingly brave. Saw Zeke willing to cross someone like Mal for the sake of his own people. And now they were gone, in the most horrible way this verse could offer. He reached out, touched Inara's shoulder, drew her into the circle of his arm. She clung to him, still too shocked to weep, just as she had been on Miranda. But she shuddered under his hands. His eyes met Zoe's, and wordlessly extended his other arm. She regarded it for a moment, her position as his second and his best friend warring in her face. Then she got awkwardly up from the chair and allowed him to draw her in as well, and the swell of her child pressing hard against his side. Life in the face of death, thought Mal, holding close to the two women who meant more to him than anyone else in the verse. And we're damned well gonna thrive, no matter what comes. We're gonna survive. We're gonna find out what happened and put a stop to it. It was time to get some answers out of the doctor. It was more than a scream of terror, or anger, or pain. It was some awful mixture of all those emotions, keening out of the girl's throat like a banshee's cry. The people immediately around them froze in shock at the horror of it, and the wail seemed to stretch on into forever. Hearts in his throat, the doctor darted forward, reaching out to catch River as she crumpled. Kaylee stood, one hand still hovering over the vendor's tray, her eyes wide and shocky, and her face ghost white as she stared at her friend. River felt light and fragile as a bird against him as he bore her up into his arms, her thin frame shaking as though caught in a high fever. Her dark eyes stared blindly, her face twisted as if in pain. He could feel distress pouring off her in great waves, but he could not understand the source of it. "River? River, what is it?" No response. She was no longer screaming audibly, but her mouth remained open and distorted. Tentatively, the doctor lowered his own mental shields, letting thin tendrils of the Atron energy that powered his abilities reach out into the psychic atmosphere. For one brief moment, he thought he felt the brush of an alien consciousness, something not human, but then nothing. "Doctor?" Kaylee's voice was small and frightened. He glanced around at the staring crowd. So much for not drawing attention. "Let's go somewhere quieter," he said softly, and turned to walk swiftly towards the side street, ignoring queries and curious remarks from the others. 2 blocks from the big midway, they found a small park, still quiet and all but empty at this hour of morning. The doctor located a bench and carefully laid River's frail form down upon it, crouching down beside her and stroking damp hair back from her forehead. Kaylee, hunched next to him, was struggling not to cry, "River, honey?" She reached out a shaking hand to touch the other girl's arm. "River?" At last River blinked and drew a great shuddering breath. "Too many," she whispered hoarsely. "Too much. There was no warning, no time to prepare." Now the little mechanic did begin to sob. "Oh, I'm so sorry, sweetie," she cried. I didn't think about the crowds." Automatically, the doctor reached out to put an arm around the young woman's shoulders, fishing with his other hand in a coat pocket for a handkerchief. His fingers brushed the metal disc, and he saw River stiffen even as, once more, something flickered at the edge of his vision. He resisted the urge to turn and look for it this time, but he strongly suspected that River's words had very little to do with the psychic pressure of the carnival crowds. He pulled out a large spotted handkerchief, clean, he was grateful to note, and pressed it into Kaylee's hand. "It's all right," he murmured soothingly to her. "It's not your fault." "Simon didn't want her to go," moaned Kaylee, tears dripping off her chin. "I thought it would be fun for her." The doctor patted her on the back, still making comforting noises, but his eyes remained on River. "What happened, River?" he asked. Her gaze was steady now, boring into his. "I saw," she said solemnly, "too much. Again." Her eyes flickered briefly to Kaylee, then back to him with an expression that said quite clearly, "No explanations now." He nodded slightly, lifting an eyebrow at her. "Later, then." Then her eyes shifted to something behind his left shoulder. "Too late," she said. "They're here." The doctor turned, just in time to catch a fist to his jaw. Mal wasn't rightly sure if Simon was going to faint or not. He'd never pegged the young doc for the fainting type, but as he watched the boy's face grow steadily whiter as he passed on the news about Three Hills, he figured there was probably a first time for everything. Alike, River had called them. Well, it was truer than he liked, but watching Simon's face now, he figured he could guess exactly what the other man was thinking. The same round of thoughts going through his own head. Neither of them had strong ties to Three Hills, but where Reaver attacks were concerned, that hardly mattered. But there was more to the grief and shock than sorrow for folks who got a fate no one deserved. There was a whole Goran lot of worry and fear. Like whether or not these abnormal reavers, what a phrase, and their shadowy slave master were real. And if they and the folk of Three Hills were slaughtered to protect their secret, as Mal was beginning to suspect, then would they be coming after Serenity next? They'd survived the battle over Mr. Universe's world mostly by sheer foolish, stubborn luck. Simon got shot, and that set his sister off. Mal wasn't sure he cared to risk all their lives on the off chance that A, River was steady enough in the brain pan to repeat the stunt willingly, or B, Simon would get shot again. Pounding bounty hunters into dust was one thing. Facing down the reavers that crawled inside her head with the rage and sanity was something else entirely. "Do you..." Simon's voice was husky. He paused, clearing his throat, and tried again. "Do you think Harkness was right? You don't think he was panicking over the fact that they weren't going to be able to drive the reavers off?" Mal hesitated. He had wondered exactly that for all of a minute. He shook his head. "I never served with Zeke Harkness in battle, but I know his reputation. He was a good soldier. Though not as good a soldier as me, he learned how to stop being a soldier. And you don't forget how to use your combat eyes. Not ever. If he says someone was giving those reavers orders and they were following them, then I'll take him at his word." Simon swallowed hard. Do you think we're in danger, then?" "Ain't sure." "Probably. We're always in danger, seems like." Mal rubbed the back of his neck. "I'll tell you this, though. As of right now, Badger's job has just hit the airlock. Zeke and his folk are owed justice, and I aim to give it to them." He could see the agreement on Simon's face, but knew that the doctor would feel compelled to question this, on general principles, if nothing else. He was not disappointed. "Is it our place?" "We were there. Hell, we may very well have brought it on them, killing those reavers in the woods and finding those tags." "You don't know that." "Not for sure, I don't. But I sure as hell wouldn't lay any bets." "Maybe not. But Zeke asked me to give him justice. Death request and all that." "You don't like Zeke." "Don't like most folk. Don't mean they don't deserve someone to speak for them." Ma's skin prickled in irritation. Damn it, he knew Simon agreed, deep down. Why couldn't he just agree and leave Mal to worry about it all in peace? Simon sighed. "Badger is going to be seriously unhappy. And it doesn't solve our cash problems." "I hate you." "Thank you, Doc," he said, instead, keeping his voice very dry. "I wasn't aware of that. Anything else you'd like to point out I might have missed?" Simon flushed. "I'll deal with Badger," said Mal. "That's my job, not yours." The young doctor sighed and pushed a hand through his hair. "I'm sorry, Mal," he said. "It's just..." He broke off for once before he shoved his foot in his mouth. "I get all hell-bent on crusading for justice," Mal finished for him. "Believe me, Doc, I'm well aware of this particular character flaw. I ain't asking you to follow me." Simon's eyes narrowed, a spark of amusement chasing away some of the darkness. "No, you never ask. You order." Mal allowed a soft snort of laughter to escape him. "Something like that. Figured I ought to warn you, though. Give you time to clear out." "You think I would desert you now?" Simon's voice was soft and icy cold. "And just when did you become a soldier, boy, to talk about deserting?" "When you made him one on Miranda." "Ah, tell me that." "No," said Mal aloud. "I don't." Stars exploded across his eyeballs, followed closely by an eruption of pain in his jaw, which was quickly replaced by a larger pain as he hit the ground hard enough to force the air from his lungs. For a few panicky heartbeats, his chest ached as his lungs struggled to work around the shock. Then his body's respiratory bypass system overrode them, and the pain subsided into a faint throbbing in his ribs and jaw. He lay still anyway, giving himself time to assess the situation. Best to let them, whoever they were, believe him human and breathless. He managed some credible fish-like gasping. Kaylee, eyes terrified but jaw set determinedly, was standing over River in a defensive stance. River was still prone. Playing possum? He hoped so, in case this lot weren't susceptible to verbal negotiations. He'd overheard enough from the rest of the crew to guess that River's small size and negligible weight were deceptive. There were four of them, mostly large and muscular-looking chaps. Three had a look of your typical hired thug found in the universe over, but the fourth, clearly the leader, had a definite look of intelligence in his eyes. That could be good or bad, depending on just how smart he was. "What do you want?" Kaylee demanded in a voice that shook only slightly. The leader of the group ignored her, instead nodding to two of his goons. They moved forward to clamp hands onto the doctor's shoulders and haul him upright. So much for leaping up to catch them off guard. He allowed himself to dangle limply, still producing magnificent wheezes. The man in charge, he needed a name. Call him Bob, then. Grasped the doctor's aching jaw in one hand and forced his head up. "Where is it?" The doctor panted, then gave it up as too melodramatic. Acting hadn't really been his thing for a number of lives now. "What?" he asked brightly. The fingers tightened painfully. "You have property that does not belong to you. Where is it?" "Well, some specifics would be nice, you know. I mean, I'm not exactly in the habit of wandering off with other people's properties. Not these days, anyway. And even if I did, it was almost for The hand gripping his face had adjusted slightly to tighten around his throat. "Search him," Bob ordered. And the extra missile came forward to begin rifling through the doctor's pockets. Oh, dear. This was a scenario he'd been through many, many times before, and he knew from experience that it could take literally hours to empty his pockets, depending on the inner dimension's current mood. He pulled out steaming teapots before, for pity's sake. And while it had on occasion been useful in delaying things, it also often resulted in him being hit with large, blunt objects as his interrogators became irritated. "You wouldn't, by chance," he croaked, "be looking for a little silvery metal thing, would you?" The designated searcher stopped instantly, and turned a curiously blank face toward his leader. "Hang on, that's weird." The doctor rolled his eyes around for a look at the face of one of the men holding his arms. That one was blank as well, and not in the blank non-expression of a trained thug, but blank of mind control? What the hell? "Give it to me," ordered Bob, and the doctor, studying his face, realized that the spark of intelligence in his eyes was not his own, that it was that of something else, sitting behind his eyes and maneuvering him like a puppet. This is not good, not good at all. His mind raced, rifling through his memory, searching for anything he might have encountered in the last 1,000 years that went in for that sort of thing. There weren't many races left out there with that kind of psychic ability, and anyway, certainly not from this timeline. It might be caused by some sort of machine. That was a hopeful thought, since machines were easy enough to thwart. "Give it to me," repeated the man, and the hand tightened once more. "Can't," rasped the doctor. "Need a free hand for that." Bob scowled, though the expression had a curious quality to it. Like a delayed signal, thought the doctor. Finally, the man nodded, and the iron grip on one of the doctor's arms relaxed. He reached into his pocket and hesitated. Choices, choices. And risks and consequences, too. If it was a machine causing this, a burst from the sonic screwdriver might interrupt the signal, give he and the girls enough time to escape in the confusion. "Do not," said Bob, and in a single swift movement had reached out and grabbed hold of Kaylee, fingers digging into her arms. She still looked terrified, but the doctor could see anger beginning to crowd it out. Not a machine, then. Machines were really only good at reaction, and rubbish at a spur-of-the-moment anticipation. Damn. That meant there was something living behind all of this, and that made things distressingly unpredictable. His fingers left the cylinder of the screwdriver and closed around the metal disc. "I don't think handing this over is a good idea. I'm getting definite no-witnesses vibes off this fellow." His eyes drifted past Bob and Kaylee and met River's dark eyes. Then, before Bob, or rather the mind controlling Bob, could notice any communication, the doctor slowly withdrew his hand and held up the psychic tag between two fingers. "Is this what you're looking for?" Even as one of the men flanking him reached for it, the doctor tossed it up, high into the air. End over end it tumbled, flashing in the morning sunlight. Human eyes, come on, they're still human eyes. And the gazes of Bob and his three men traveled upwards, following the trajectory of the little metal disc as up and up it went.